Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Serving the great state of Montana, from the peaks of the Beartooths to the banks of the Clark Fork River. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, you guys just heard the same Fox News update that I did. So here was the line that stood out to me in that report there, talking about the deportation of these criminal illegal aliens. The Fox News radio reporter says, under a rarely used Alien Enemies Act, well, aren't we under a rare invasion of our country right now? I mean, somebody tell me, when in our nation's 249 years of history were we invaded by over 10 million criminal illegal aliens? You know, tell me when were we in our history, in our nation's 249-year history, right? And so... So here you have, you know, they're trying to say, well, this is a rarely used Alien Enemies Act. Well, what Joe Biden and John Tester did in the last 4 years was extremely rare, allowing a full-blown invasion of this country by millions and millions of illegal aliens, including criminal gangs, rapists, murderers, terrorists, and drug dealers. And so why would a rarely used law be used right now, especially because we see a rare invasion of this country? Anyway, just wanted to make that point here for the random start for you here this morning. Man, a lot of interesting stuff to get to here this morning. We had the Florida Governor Ron DeSantis in Montana yesterday afternoon, did a full press conference with Governor Greg Gianforte. I've got some of the highlights on our Montana Talks website already. In fact, got the full video posted after the press conference wrapped up yesterday afternoon. And then we'll play some of the audio for you here in this hour of the show as well, so you can hear a part of what Governor DeSantis and Governor Gianforte talked about in the Capitol yesterday. But basically, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis was in Montana Monday afternoon touting a balanced budget amendment to rein in federal deficit spending. Joining Governor Gianforte at a press conference at the governor's office yesterday afternoon, both governors highlighted the strong fiscal conservatism of red states like Montana and Florida. And so we'll have audio for you here pretty soon. Governor Gianforte also noted that Montana and Florida are the only two states in the country where wage growth exceeded inflation over the last 4 years. Of course, Montana and Florida, two red states with Republican governors who, you know, made the right call after COVID-19, made the right call when it comes to tax policy, made the right call when it comes to reducing the regulatory red tape, you name it. Also, drama in the Montana State Senate. Shortly after that press conference wrapped up, we'll tell you about that and much more. Stand by, back after your first news and weather break here on Montana Talks.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. With lingering clouds and a few isolated showers around early today, along with some breaks of sun later in the day as well. High temperature readings will stay at around 60 to 65. For tonight, we can expect clear to partly cloudy skies, lows from the mid-30s to around 40 degrees, and then on Wednesday with some sunshine, highs from the mid-60s in Bozeman to the mid-70s in Billings. That's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm meteorologist Paul Frombly.
Securing America.
The U.S.'s biggest national security threats are often debated. However, Chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Arkansas Republican Rick Crawford, recently told the Fox News Rundown podcast, the biggest threat may be America itself.
I think one of our biggest threats to our national security and to our open society is our open society. And it's something that our adversaries know and they leverage against us.
He says respecting constitutional rights and freedoms while maintaining security is a delicate balance, and feels our biggest outside threat right now is the current Cold War situation with China.
Much like we were with the Soviets. But this one, I think, is a little bit higher stakes. And I think China has had the luxury of hindsight and being able to learn from the mistakes that the Soviet Union made.
Crawford says we must maintain good relations with allies in the Western Hemisphere and give them a credible economic alternative to Chinese investment. Kip Uletsky, Fox News.
Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors. Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August.
Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast, like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search our names, Clay and Buck. Listen and subscribe.
Spring. Montana Talks, where you get the mic. Call in now at 406-294-0970. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
All right, let's see. I got to reboot my computer. I was going to try to run the audio in here for you, but let me give my studio computer a quick reboot here. There's another interesting story here for a random start for you here. Do you guys remember Lawrence Van Dyke? Great guy. He's from Montana, of course, part of the Van Dyke family out of the Gallatin Valley. He was the Solicitor General for the state of Montana, ran for the Supreme Court seat here in Montana, won election as well. But he is now on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. He's a federal judge. And he just critiqued California's anti-gun laws in a very unique way. He posted a video on YouTube showing his guns and explaining how wrong the California laws were and how nonsensical they are and how the people who created those laws don't know the first thing about guns. I'll play that story for you here at some point this morning. Very interesting stuff. Good job by Judge Van Dyke. First, so let's roll it. Caden's going to roll it from our production studio in there. We're just going to start with the opening remarks from the DeSantis Gianforte press conference yesterday.
Good afternoon. I'm glad to be joined today by my friend, Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida. We're here to champion some of our shared priorities for holding the federal government accountable, ensuring fiscal responsibility, and urging the adoption of a balanced budget amendment to the U.S. Constitution. Reckless spending in Washington, particularly in the last 4 years under Joe Biden, has left us more than $36 trillion in debt. While increasing the size of government, piling debt onto the backs of future generations, in Washington, they've been spending like drunken sailors. And that's not what our founding fathers envisioned. We need a change, and fast, to prevent our children and grandchildren from inheriting this mess that they've created. As you know, there is no constitutional limit on congressional borrowing. It's up to Congress to police itself. Unfortunately, no two-year Congress can bind a succeeding two-year Congress by simple statute. And talk about balancing the federal budget in Washington, it's not a popular message. I know firsthand. When I was first sworn in as a member of Congress, I chose this very topic for my first speech. I proposed legislation on my first day in Congress to prohibit lawmakers in Washington from being paid unless they passed a balanced budget. Shockingly, I was booed by both Democrats and Republicans. So in an interesting way, I actually brought everybody together. It's clear, Washington needs some encouragement to get its fiscal house in order. We can't expect Washington to impose permanent fiscal restraints on itself. That's why we need a balanced budget amendment to the U.S. Constitution. While every business, school district, city, or family must balance their budgets, sadly, the U.S. government doesn't have to do the same. Meanwhile, at the state level, every state but one has a balanced budget requirement in its constitution. in Montana, we've been hyper-focused on delivering not only a balanced budget, but also cutting income taxes for Montanans at every income level, holding the line on new spending, and keeping spending growth well under inflation, and even paying off the state debt. Our efforts have resulted in Montana now being completely debt-free. And while we've been fiscally responsible, the reality is the nationwide affordability crisis has harmed hardworking Montanans. Because of our conservative and balanced budgets over the last 4 years, Montana has a surplus again to deliver historic tax relief. In fact, thanks to our strong fiscal management, we were able to propose the largest income tax cut in state history, so more Montanans can keep more of their hard-earned money. That's what's possible with strong fiscal discipline. Thankfully, with President Trump in the White House and with strong leadership of Republican governors across the nation, we're restoring common sense and putting the American people first. Again, I'm glad to have my friend Governor Ron DeSantis here. He knows a thing or two about balancing budgets and cutting taxes. He spent a little time in Idaho this morning, then came here to Montana to meet with legislators, which we just concluded. With that, I'll turn it over to Governor DeSantis. Okay.
Well, thank you, Governor. It's great to be back in Montana. If you know anything about Florida, you know, particularly come summertime, we got quite a number of our residents that make their way up to various parts of Montana, and I've had the fortune of being able to be up here over the summer in the past, and you can see why. It's a beautiful country, a lot less humid than the state of Florida, and you see why people want to come and enjoy it here. And I also feel at home, not just because there's a lot of Floridians that are amongst us in the summers, but I also know I'm in a state that sees things similar the way the state of Florida does. And they've done a lot of great work in here, both under the governor's leadership as well as the Montana legislature. I know they got more that's in the hopper for this legislative session. I know the governor's pushing tax relief and some really good stuff, and hopefully we see all that get to a landing. But you guys have done a great job, and the proof's in the pudding. People have gravitated to Montana. They have fled states that have performed poorly as a matter of policy, and they've gravitated to states like Florida and Montana. And I expect that to continue into the future. But no matter how well we can do in Florida, and I can sit here and tell you, you know, we're ranked number one in economy 2 years in a row, number one in education, 50-year low in the crime rate. We got the lowest of any state that has debt, the lowest per capita debt in the country. We're spending less money this year than last year, cutting taxes. I can go through all that, and it's great, and it's important to show leadership. But ultimately, the states are not going to be successful.
We'll pause it right there. More with Governor DeSantis right after this.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
Mobility is a driving force in the economy as old as America. Moving for better land, more political freedom, or seeking fortune was embedded deeply into our DNA from the beginning of the country. But mobility today is different because of technology and because of differences in policies of different states. A new study that examined the extensive data available on where people work and where they live has made some interesting findings. Compared to 2019, workers are living further away from their workplaces, on average 26 miles away compared to 15 miles before the pandemic. A significant fraction of those hired after March 2020 commuted more than 50 miles, and the higher the pay, the longer the commute, particularly in finance, information, and professional services jobs. The study also found that many workers who stayed with the same employer relocated to different states, which tended to be states with lower top tax rates and cheaper housing. Those relocations are more prevalent for higher earners. I'm Patrick Parkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.
I'm Chad Pergram with the Speaker's Lobby. Former House Speaker John Boehner long argued that nothing good would happen in the House of Representatives if lawmakers met for more than three consecutive weeks. That's because lawmakers start to get antsy, ornery, tempers flare. They're away from their families. So House and Senate leaders try to prevent having either body in session for more than three or four consecutive weeks at a time. The House has taken one brief recess this year, but the Senate never took a break until recently. It was in session for 10 consecutive weeks, the longest such stretch for continual Senate action in 15 years. New Senate Majority Leader John Thune held senators in Washington to plow through confirmation of all of President Trump's major nominees, except U.N. Ambassador pick Elise Stefanik, who still serves in the House. Note that just because because the House or Senate isn't in session doesn't mean that lawmakers aren't working. There are often field hearings during a recess, and lawmakers use the time when Congress isn't convening in Washington to meet with constituents in their districts or states, visit schools, and attend town hall meetings. With the Speaker's Lobby, Chad Pergram, Fox News.
Good morning, everybody. It's time for your Daybreak Ag Report. I'm Russell Nemitz, and thanks for being with us here on the Western Ag Network. Well, one of the wolves imported out of British Columbia and released in January in Colorado was lethally removed in Wyoming by federal officials on March 15th. With more on this story, here's our network's Rachel Gable.
According to USDA APHIS, Wildlife Services responded to a sheep predation event on private lands in north central Wyoming. Evidence consistent with wolf depredation was observed, including tracks, struggle sites, carcasses with hemorrhaging, and bite marks consistent with known wolf predations. In total, five adult sheep were killed by a wolf, including one sheep that was heavily fed upon. Wildlife Services removed the wolf at the location and, upon closer examination, identified that that wolf had a collar from Colorado Parks and Wildlife. Wyoming Game and Fish returned the wolf and the collar to CPW, which was identified as male gray wolf 2505 BC. For the Fence Post Magazine and Western Ag Network, I'm Rachel Gable.
All right, thanks a lot, Rachel. Now, CPW does have an agreement with Utah, New Mexico, and Arizona. Should any of the reintroduced gray wolves travel to those states, that allows the wolves to be captured and returned in an effort to help protect the Mexican wolf population in those states. However, an agreement like that doesn't exist with states like Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming. Stay with us. We'll have more ag news right after this.
I'm Kara Ronan from Rody Farm, and I became a member of the Montana Farmers Union for the community and connections with other producers that create a strong network of farmers and ranchers who unite in the fight for family farms here in Montana. I really love being able to work with MFU with my boots on the ground to help steer policy not only locally here in Montana, but nationally as well.
Join us in supporting Montana family farms and ranches across the state of Montana. Learn more today at MontanaFarmersUnion.com.
At Hould Angus of Havre, Montana, you'll find cattle with maternal performance backed by genetics with maternal integrity. It truly is a commercial cowman's program. This year's bull offering is again very heavily influenced by OCC and the old Inbar emulation bloodlines. Saturday, April 5th, 67 Angus bulls sell, including 37 yearlings and 32-year-olds plus 20 yearling heifer calves. Sale time is 1 o'clock at the ranch, 10 miles south of Havre, Montana. Also carried live on Frontier Live Sale. For more information, visit HouldAngus.com. Ranchers, this Thursday, March 27th, it's the Gibbs Red Angus Annual Production Sale at the Glasgow Stockyards, Glasgow, Montana. This year, 45 registered yearling Red Angus bulls and 25 registered yearling Red Angus heifers sell. Sale time is 1 o'clock. And remember, you can either bid in person or online. For more information, check out their Facebook page or visit GibbsRedAngus.com. Again, it's the Gibbs Red Angus Annual Production Sale this Thursday, Glasgow Stockyards, Glasgow, Montana. Well, this week, the National Corn Growers Association and others asked the Trump administration to grant exemptions of bulk shipments for America's commodity groups as it considers implementing fees against Chinese vessels to level the playing field between U.S. and Chinese shipbuilders. Now, the request came through comments submitted to the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative. The proposed fees are expected to increase the cost, though, of transporting bulk grain like corn. In fact, NCGA says these costs could translate to an additional 34 to 64 cents per bushel of corn, which is almost always passed down to the grower. An additional shipping cost, it says, couldn't come at a worse time for U.S. farmers. For the Western Ag Network, I'm Russell Nemitz.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, so Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, just as we went to the break there, in his opening remarks at this press conference at the Montana Capitol yesterday, he was talking, look, hey, look, I can talk about Florida all day long. I can talk about how we're ranked number one in the economy 2 years in a row, number one in education, 50-year low in the crime rate, lowest of any state that has debt, the lowest per capita debt in the country. spending less money this year than they did last year. They're cutting taxes. He says, I can go through all that. It's great. It's important to show leadership. And, of course, you knew there was a but that was coming. And then that's where he transitions to talking about the massive federal debt.
But ultimately, the states are not going to be successful if federal spending and the Congress does not get under control. When the turn of the 21st century happened, we were about $5.6 trillion in debt as a country. So that's from the time George Washington put his hand on the Bible as the first president in 1789 all the way until the turn of the 21st century. It was $5.6 trillion. Today, 25 years later, we're at over $36 trillion in debt. Just the interest that we pay to service our existing debt is over $1 trillion annually. That's more than what we spend on the core function of the federal government, our national defense. And in the budget that the Republicans in the House passed, they project that the total national debt by the year 2034 will be almost $56 trillion. That is not sustainable. The one thing I've learned, having been in the Congress for a few terms, and I've recovered from that experience, but I was there, is Congress is just not going to start behaving differently. That is not going to happen. And even if somehow they had an epiphany and they governed a little bit differently, the next Congress would come in and undo it, and none of this stuff would ever have staying power. So the Founding Fathers understood this could happen. They understood that the federal officials, particularly in Congress, could be the problem. And they provided with the states with the ability to propose amendments to the Constitution to fix things. And so a balanced budget amendment to the U.S. Constitution is basically limiting the ability of politicians in Washington to bankrupt the country. It's saying that you can't just keep putting things on a credit card and passing the buck to future generations. Just think, go back to the late 1990s. We actually had a balanced budget in this country. And while that was being done, you had Republicans in Congress, which you had a Democrat president, and they were fighting over it, but the momentum was to balance the budget. You also had a debate in the Congress about a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution. Congress came one vote short of certifying a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution for ratification by the states. Just imagine if they had actually enacted that back 25 years ago, how much different would things look fiscally?
Great to hear a little bit about what Florida Governor Ron DeSantis had to say yesterday alongside Montana Governor Greg Gianforte during that press conference at the Capitol. Maybe we'll get to some more highlights here later this morning or tomorrow. Full video is on our Montana Talks website. I was really hoping that one of these liberal reporters would try to pick a fight with DeSantis, but they wisely did not try. With Ron DeSantis. They didn't even try to fight with him. They're like, you know what? We're just going to get this press conference over and then go back to the floor fight on the floor of the Montana Senate. An update on that front for you. First, a couple of headlines here. First, we'll take a step back here for just a second. Earlier this week, actually over the weekend, the Montana Republican Party, the executive board for the Montana Republican Party, had called for the resignation of State Senator Jason Ellsworth, a Republican out of the Bitterroot Valley of Montana, the former Senate president who has been basically voting with eight other Republican state senators alongside Democrats when it comes to rules and committee assignments and things like that, you know, undermining the current Republican Senate president. Well, yesterday there were two moves. There was one move to expel. There was one motion to expel Senator Ellsworth from the state Senate altogether. And then there was another motion, once that failed, to censure Senator Ellsworth. That motion failed as well. Here is the headline from the Lee newspapers, which is, of course, the Helena IR, Billings Gazette, etc. Democratic coalition blocks expulsion of GOP Senator Ellsworth. Most Democrats argued Monday that expulsion would be disproportionate to the ethics violation and put forward a censure option that Republicans asserted did not meet the severity of Ellsworth's actions. Ellsworth, chiming in during the hearing, continued to deny violating any rules, regulations, or laws, but said he regretted creating the appearance of a conflict of interest. Senate Minority Leader Pat Flowers, the Democrat out of Belgrade, and Senate President Matt Regeer, the Republican out of Kalispell, both said they would next sit down and negotiate how to move forward with addressing Ellsworth's actions. Flowers is staunchly against expulsion, the Democrat, while Regeer is in favor of it, and neither one indicated following the floor debate that they would soften on their stances. Both said they are not comfortable with Ellsworth going unpunished. Immediately after the stalemate, this is from the Lee newspapers, both parties began jockeying to control the narrative. Senate Democrats put out a press release titled, Senate Republicans Fail to Hold Senator Ellsworth Accountable. It was the Democrats who bit. Oh, my goodness. That's just hysterical on the Senate Democrats' part. Meanwhile, Senator Tom McGilvery out of Billings, the Republican, and the Senate Majority Leader sent out a press release titled, Senate Democrats Vote to Protect Republican Corruption. Yeah, it was the Democrats ultimately, by and large, who protected the Republican in this instance.
You're listening to Montana Talks, bringing truth and freedom to Montana. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
All right, let's see. We got a couple of messages that came in on the Montana Talks app. Tom in Billings said this, the Montana GOP should remove the Nasty Nine from being reelected as a Republican. Of course, he's referring to the nine Republican state senators that have been voting with the Democrats on committee assignments and key rule changes. Tom, thanks for that message. Evan and Belt sent us a message a few minutes ago. Isn't it interesting that illegal aliens want to try and stay in this country, and citizens like Rosie O'Donnell and Ellen DeGeneres want to get out? The common denominator is they are all backed by the Communist Democrat Party, who are trying to coerce our nation into their ideals. And then they say, we are the oligarchy. Strange. It is strange, isn't it, Evan? Yeah. As for Rosie and Ellen, get out. Good. Get out. Nobody cares. See you later, right? I feel bad for our friends in Ireland, but hey, you can have her. And Ellen DeGeneres, you know, the liberals started to hate her as much. We don't hate Ellen DeGeneres. We may disagree with her politics, but we don't hate her. But some of the liberals really started to hate Ellen DeGeneres. So she didn't just leave because of Donald J. Trump. She left for other reasons, too. She was just despised by even her own fellow liberals here in the country. Ever since she was busted smiling while sitting next to George W. Bush, that was it. She was out. Which is another reminder that, you know, they didn't just call Donald Trump Hitler and a Nazi and Elon Musk Hitler and a Nazi. They said the same thing about George W. Bush. They said the same thing about John McCain. They said the same thing about George H.W. Bush. They said the same thing about these wacko leftists have been spouting this nonsense for decades against any Republican. But just now it's on steroids because Donald Trump is doing such an incredible job to get this country moving in the right direction. But speaking of Rosie O'Donnell, that's why I say your messages, your phone calls oftentimes drive the conversation here. I do want to get to this story about Judge Van Dyke out in the Ninth Circuit. But since Evan and Belt mentioned Rosie O'Donnell, you know, Rosie O'Donnell self-deported to Ireland. We talked about that a little bit here on the show. She explained why she made that decision, and she talked about meeting with her therapist. Jesse Waters has a bit of a montage here, starting with the fact that the Democrat Party is in such complete disarray that some people are, even Bernie Sanders is basically telling people not to vote for the Democrat Party. You would think that the why did the party of slavery, the Democrat Party, even last this long to begin with? But some are speculating that the Democrat Party itself could be on the verge of collapse.
They're the most unpopular they've ever been. And remember, this party held slaves. And now they're being told to go into hiding.
If you're a Democrat, I'm going to tell you the worst thing that you could do right now. Speak for that god party. Okay? That party's brand is in such disarray. They have no ideology. My only problem with the Democratic Party is that even the people that are good, the brand of being a Democrat is so bad.
Yeah, you got to rebrand that.
This shit up.
The brand's so toxic that lifelong liberals aren't even staying to fight. They're moving to Ireland. Where'd they come up with that plan? In therapy.
I feel on the verge of crying when I was there. When he got elected, I luckily had a plan with my therapist. Hope she's watching. Hi, Ann. And I said to her, should he be elected, which none of us thought was going to happen, I need a plan. And the plan was always on and only Ireland.
All right, anyway. Do we send a thank you note to Rosie O'Donnell's therapist? Thank you for telling Rosie to leave the country. And if there's other therapists out there advising other crazy left-wingers, would you please advise them to do the same thing? All right. Speaking of crazy leftists, did you guys hear about this judge that was saying how this was a liberal judge? And this liberal judge was commenting on the deportations of these criminal illegal aliens, including the rapists, the murderers, the violent Venezuelan Tren de Aragua gang members, and much more. And this judge had the audacity to claim that Nazis were treated better than these, you know, criminal illegal aliens, you know, rapists, murderers, Tren de Aragua gang members, etc. Tom Holman, the border czar, was on with Laura Ingraham last night giving his raw instant reaction to that story.
He quoted, and this is why she said it in open court today in the D.C. Court of Appeals, again, the same case. She said that Nazis were given more process than the individuals removed under the Alien and Enemies Act. Your response to her?
Well, it's just an example of an out-of-touch a judge, an activist judge, making a comparison. You kidding me? To the Holocaust and Nazis? First, what the hell has that got to do with anything? We're talking about Alien and Enemies Act. We're talking about terrorists being deported from the United States. It's disgusting she even said that. And to just try to evoke more, you know, nonsense on the left media, whatever. But it's a ridiculous statement to make. And again, it's another example of an activist judge who doesn't understand, or probably understands, but wants to push back against the Trump administration, who was given a mandate to arrest public safety threats and get them out of the country, especially terrorists. So, you know, it is what it is, but I think DOJ will win this case and we'll keep doing what we're doing. You know, the president has made it clear. We're going to arrest illegal aliens. We're going to prioritize public safety threats and national security threats. We're going to continue to do it. We're going to do it without apologies, especially in sanctuary cities who let these people hit the streets and create a public safety issue.
Now, we'll talk more about that story later in the morning when John Jackson, the Joker from X, is in the house with us. Greg Jarrett, the Fox News legal analyst, has some great comments about how that Judge Boasberg, how that guy is basically standing in complete opposition to Supreme Court precedents when it comes to the use of the Alien Enemies Act. So I've got that soundbite on standby here when we go back to that conversation. All right, let's get to this. I've got a shorter version of this report, but I like the longer version of the report here. As a Fox News affiliate, yeah, we've got access to the Fox News radio story here by William Lajeunesse. I want to play the longer version, though, because it has some great soundbites from Montana's own, the former Montana Solicitor General, Judge Van Dyke, who is now on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. He's like one of the only normal judges on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Hi, I'm Judge Van Dyke, and welcome to my chambers.
Two things here you've never seen before. A federal judge from the liberal Ninth Circuit in San Francisco with an AK-47 hanging on his wall. Second, Judge Lawrence Van Dyke posted part of his dissent on YouTube, a first in court history.
I'm sure I could explain all of this in writing without being accused of improper fact-finding, but it's obviously much more effective to simply show you.
In a show-and-tell, the Trump-appointed judge argues California's ban on so-called high-capacity magazines violates the Constitution.
On many of this court's ideas about the Second Amendment, it stems from a basic misunderstanding of how firearms work.
Van Dyke's video came after losing 7-4, with the court's liberals upholding California's ban on magazines holding more than 10 rounds.
There hasn't been a decision.
Clinton appointee Judge Marsha Berzon didn't appreciate his novel dissent, saying, while the facts Judge Van Dyke asserts must be ignored, his wildly improper video presentation warrants additional comment, lest the genre proliferate. Others disagree.
It was fabulous. It helped me to understand a relatively complex issue that would have taken, you know, probably 30 pages to explain.
Van Dyke argues magazines are not accessories, but part of the gun itself.
The entire handgun here, including the grip, this takedown lever, the slide and barrel, the sighting system, and this magazine are all part of the arm within the meaning of the Second Amendment.
Yeah, what a great job there by Judge Van Dyke. A cool video as well. Let me tell you about a cool deal that's going right now. If you're trying to take advantage of spring to do some great home improvements, YHIC, your home improvement company, you can transform your space up to 30% off on a bathroom remodel. Imagine turning your bathroom into a spa-like retreat, and you can do so with financing that you can handle. Zero down. Zero interest, zero payments for 12 months. That's 2026. Call 406-948-2836 today to schedule your free in-home consultation. This is a limited time offer you don't want to miss. Let me repeat, get up to 30% off a bathroom remodel. Call 406-948-2836. You're going to love the difference with your home improvement company. Go to YHIC.com. to find out how. Yeah, springtime's a great time to do home improvements and invest in your space. The legislative update up next.
Waking up on the right side. This is the Sean Hannity Morning Minute.
Pam Bondi weighed in, and she has now cautioned Jasmine Crockett to tread very carefully with her plans to take down Tesla boss Elon Musk because he's daring to identify waste, fraud, and abuse. And by the way, every liberal that's saying they're cutting this, they're cutting. No, they're not. They're just flat out lying. All the CR did was refund the government at current levels. That's all it did. And if they tell you otherwise, they're just flat out lying. Elon Musk, by the way, is now threatened to sue former Democrat Jamal Bowman after the ex-squad member called him a Nazi and a thief on fake news CNN. He said, I've had enough. Lawsuit inbound. Good for him.
From coast to coast, from sea to shining sea, it's the Sean Hannity Show.
Only two things in life are certain, death and taxes. Well, now there's a third certainty. If you're with Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile, you could be saving a fortune every single month if you switch to my cell phone provider, a veteran-owned company called Pure Talk. Now, that's right, Pure Talk, my sponsor, is cutting the fat from the wireless industry. For just $25 a month, you can get unlimited talk and text, 5 gigs of data on America's most dependable 5G network, and the average family of four saving over $1,000 a year when they switch to Pure Talk. That's real money in your pocket for the exact same service. And with Pure Talk, you have U.S. customer service representatives. They'll make the switch simple, fast, and free and easy. To do it, dial #250, say the keyword save now to make the switch. Do it now. You save an additional 50% off your first month. #250, keyword save now, and start saving today. Pure Talk, wireless by Americans for Americans.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. With lingering clouds and a few isolated showers around early today, along with some breaks of sun later in the day as well. High temperature readings will stay at around 60 to 65. For tonight, we can expect clear to partly cloudy skies, lows from the mid-30s to around 40 degrees. And then on Wednesday with some sunshine, highs from the mid-60s in Bozeman to the mid-70s in Billings. That's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
Hey, last week when there was rumor of cartel activity on the Fort Peck Indian Reservation, there were also rumors about something going on in Havre, Montana. Well, now we know why. U.S. Border Patrol Havre Sector confirming on their Facebook page that a U.S. citizen has been arrested for aiding in the smuggling of three Tren de Aragua illegal alien gang members. That's out of Havre, Montana. We've got the full story. Go to MontanaTalks.com for that and much more.
Hey.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Time now for a legislative update brought to you by the Montana Family Foundation. Here's President of the Montana Family Foundation and former Speaker Pro Tem of the Montana House of Representatives, Jeff Laszlocki.
When it comes to analyzing and processing bills, it all comes down to committees. And when it comes to committees, there are four types. A committees are the workhorses. They meet Monday through Friday from 8 until noon. B committees have lighter workloads and meet Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 3 p.m. until 5 p.m. The committees with the lightest workloads are the C committees. They meet Tuesdays and Thursdays from 3 to 5 p.m. Legislators typically serve on an A, B, and C committee. The fourth type of committee meets whenever necessary. This would be the House and Senate Ethics Committees or Rules Committees. And of all 45 total committees, the powerhouses are the House and Senate Appropriations and Finance and Claims Committees, which handle the budget, and the House and Senate Judiciary Committees, which handle all of the heavy moral and ethical bills. Things like the death penalty, gun control, free speech, religious liberty, LGBT issues, and assisted suicide. And of the two, House Judiciary carries a much heavier workload. That's because the House has twice as many members in the Senate, so more bills originate in the House, and many of these are killed without ever making it to the Senate. The House and Senate Judiciary Committees are where the Montana Family Foundation Government Affairs team spends most of its time. And the chair of House Judiciary is Representative Amy Regeer. I vice-chaired the House Judiciary Committee 25 years ago, and of all the judiciary chairs I've seen over the past 2.5 decades, Representative Regeer is one of the best. Because of the types of bills heard in the committee, hearings can be emotionally charged, and Representative Regeer never loses control. Meetings are orderly, timely, and fair. Those on either side of every issue, whether they be Republicans or Democrats, conservatives or liberals, are all treated equally and with respect. She plays by the rules, and she expects everyone else in the room to do so as well. She's kind and gentle with a backbone of steel, exactly the demeanor necessary to keep the committee on track, as evidenced by two bills heard last week that could have easily gone off the rails. The first was House Bill 798, a bill to repeal the provision in Montana's Constitution that defines marriage as a union between a man and a woman. Not surprisingly, the bill was brought by Montana's only transgender legislator, who was also sanctioned for leading a riot on the House floor last session. Last Friday, we discussed that bill on this broadcast, and today I'm happy to report that the bill is dead. It was killed yesterday in the Judiciary Committee on a party line vote. I'm also happy to report that the entire process from hearing through committee vote was orderly and respectful. The other bill was Senate Bill 218, a bill to provide for a private right of action for those who undergo so-called gender-affirming care and then later suffer medical complications or regret. The hearing was packed with both proponents and opponents, and at one point, a transgender lobbyist who should have known better called a medical professional from our side an expletive. The hearing could have gone south, but Representative Regeer forcefully intervened, and the hearing continued without further incident. It's hard to serve in the legislature, and it's even harder to maintain decorum in contentious hearings. We applaud all of the committee chairs that work so hard to ensure that the process remains equitable and fair for everyone involved. For the Montana Family Foundation, this is Jeff Laszlocki reminding you that this government is your government, and your input does make a difference.
Contact the Montana Family Foundation at 406-628-1141 or on the web at montanafamily.org.
All right, thanks to Jeff Laszlocki for another great legislative update. Coming up in the 7 o'clock hour of the show before John Jackson joins us later on in the morning, this is going to be really cool. This is going to be really interesting. This is something I've been trying to line up for quite some time now. So
if you are a district judge, a state district judge here in Montana, and an illegal alien comes before your court, what happened to that illegal alien last year under the Biden administration? And what's happening now under the Trump administration? This Yellowstone County district judge says she's been seeing a lot of illegal aliens come through her courtroom, and they're being deported. So that's going to be a very interesting conversation. She joins us in studio next hour.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
Mobility is a driving force in the economy as old as America. Moving for better land, more political freedom, or seeking fortune was embedded deeply into our DNA from the beginning of the country. But mobility today is different because of technology and because of differences in policies of different states. A new study that examined the extensive data available on where people work and where they live has made some interesting findings. Compared to 2019, workers are living further away from their workplaces, an average 26 miles away compared to 15 miles before the pandemic. A significant fraction of those hired after March 2020 commuted more than 50 miles. And the higher the pay, the longer the commute, particularly in finance, information, and professional services jobs. The study also found that many workers who stayed with the same employer relocated to different states, which tended to be states with lower top tax rates and cheaper housing. Those relocations are more prevalent for higher earners. I'm Patrick Parkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.